This is a replay of the Thursday night, June 15th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. You got 3 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And if all else fails, I got the tabloids. That's right, slam from the checkout line. Pretty interesting this week, actually. I made the mistake of starting to read them after last night's show and spent a few hours with that. So maybe there are things to impart after all. But in the meantime, the advice I gave you, do not answer the phone if you do not recognize who is calling. Period. Let me add to that advice, all right? And that is, if you do that, go back and listen to your messages. Oh, man. Yeah, so that's precisely what I didn't do. Missed two calls. They canceled an appointment today for John that had us driving many, many miles to get there only to find out, didn't you get our message? I'm like, uh-oh. Sure enough, they sent one. So the reason for the admonishment, by the way, again, is to say that if you're sick and tired of all these telemarketing calls and robocalls, understand that the way your phone number routinely is sold is that a robocall will determine that you've answered, and that means it's a live number, it's a real person, and then they sell that. So I strongly say do not answer the phone if you do not know who is calling. And boy, I learned this the hard way. I wound up blowing out a couple phone numbers that I did answer. And then literally in under a month, I started getting about 20 telemarketing calls a day. So of course I changed the number. And ever since then, I don't answer anything that I don't recognize. The problem today is I didn't check the messages, so that's a caveat there. Now, like I say, people behaving badly, we've got a lot of that. All sorts of links from James, of course, who comes up with, really some of the more out there stuff. The first one, though, was not people behaving badly. It was, I'll say culling the herd, except, man, I'll tell you what, when you're in a sweltering heat wave, which is the case of parts of Mexico, you are going to do all you can to cool off. Well, the entire family was found dead after spending the night in their car running the AC to beat the heat. And apparently, this is about as bad as it gets in Mexico, 113 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's most of the states, about two-thirds of the states. And so this family, he was an accountant, his wife, their 8-year-old daughter, climbed into the car to cool out after blackout spread across the area. It wasn't that he lived in non-air-conditioned conditions, it was that the power was out, which happens. Sadly, no good can come of that. It is incredibly dangerous. I probably don't have to tell you that. But if not, what's going to happen? You leave that car idling and you turn on the AC and you think there's no problem. Well, chances are carbon monoxide is going to be in a mix released over a long period of time, enough to cause you death. And a number of people who die sleeping in cars with the AC on, that's exactly the deal. Now, it's also possible in this case, they don't know yet, that once the family was asleep, the engine switched off and they suffocated, but more likely it's carbon monoxide. The family was out without electricity for 8 days in severe temperature, and the garage, the whole car, well, this is what's worse, was in the garage. All right, don't do that. Yeah, to say the least. But I understand when you're dealing with that type of sweltering heat and you don't know what to do. Well, I'm about to tell you what not to do. There you go. Do not leave the car in the garage and leave it running, no matter what. And even not in the garage, do not think that you can just peacefully fall asleep with the air conditioning. By the way, I'm not 100% sure what they drove, but most cars that I have been in contact with during heat, or not during heat in general, is that if you're just in park idling, after a while the AC is not going to work anyway. Well, the bottom line is that the car is going to heat up very quickly. And we talk about this very often with regard to pets. A car can reach 125 degrees in just a few minutes when it's not even 100 degrees outside. So it's happening in Canada, in Mexico, across Mexico. There are 4 other deaths in municipalities over that heat stroke, things of this nature. And the problem, of course, is when the power's out, it's not only your air conditioning, it's probably everybody you know on the block's air conditioning. So you know all the things in terms of try to find a pre-designated cooler location, but sometimes good luck on that. Wear lightweight clothing, take cool showers and baths if you can. Limit being outdoors. And if you have to go outdoors, do it early in the day. And all that's still going to be downright awful, but may save your life if you stay out of the car. All right, 888-876-5593. Now, we talked about scams, and Karen's talking about phone calls. Yeah, anymore, the phone is the probably the scammer's all-time best friend. So, Karen, welcome back to WGN Radio. Hey, Karen.
Oh, hi, Raleigh. I'm sorry. Yeah, you know what? I did exactly what you did, and I missed a doctor appointment, and they charged me $25 because I didn't show up.
Oh, yeah. And the worst the worst part is not them charging you $25 for not showing up. It's you spending even more than that in time and money to show up when they've canceled the appointment.
I know. What I do now, I have, fortunately for me, I have star 69, which is a caller ID. And because I don't have talking ID, I had to fight with Comcast, but I finally got it back.
Okay.
Well, what I do is I check star 69. If I don't recognize that phone number, then I go to my voicemail and see if they left me a voicemail.
Yeah, oh, yeah, very wise to do. But, of course, all of us, when we're in a rush, we say, oh, I'll do that later.
Oh, I know. I know that one. Yeah. But I finally, after getting that little lesson that I got with the doctor's office, I decided I'm really better off to take the time to do it because, and it's such a hassle to get a cab around here because I live on a busy street. Fortunately for me, I have a friend who drives me, and we have an agreement where I pay him, and like he will help me. He knows the doctor's office. He makes sure I get into the office and I get help when I come out.
Uh-huh.
It behooves me to check because if I don't, now I've inconvenienced two of us.
Right. Oh, absolutely. No, words to live by. We just fail to do it.
I'm and thank you for the Manhattans last night.
Oh, glad you liked it.
Yeah, I sure did. Mm-hmm. Anytime you want to play a Manhattan song, you go right ahead.
All right. Good deal. Thanks, okay. Karen. Appreciate it.
And thank you so much. Keep up the good work. I love your show.
Great to have you. You know, they talk about an optimist being one who opens their front door and sees nothing but horse manure and says, where's the horse? Well, in this case, a family found over 1 million copper pennies while cleaning out their home. So, of course, well, maybe you don't know what they thought. But we'll tell you, and we'll also tell you what they did. 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, want to mention the CCEP Pro once more. Yeah, CC Radio, Bob Crane, just the best, should be knighted, because back in the day when manufacturers started spending about a nickel on AM reception, Bob said, hey, I can do this better, and he did. The reception that you used to enjoy on the radio, AM and FM, you can still enjoy on the radio with all the Sea Crane radios. And there are many, many from which to choose. So if you go to ccradio.com, ccradio.com, you can see them all. And there's some great choices. The CC Radio EP Pro is simplicity at its finest. I've got one in the kitchen. I've got one in the bathroom. And the deal is, it's just a slide rule dial. You know, the needle and dial tuning, where you just, you know, dial it in yourself and there it is. It's got a button for power and it's got a button for a bright display light, but there's no clock or alarm or timer or anything like that. You do have tone switches, bass and treble, which can fine-tune the audio to what you want to hear. But best of all, what you don't see is it's got that twin coil ferrite antenna, which makes AM listening a sheer pleasure. FM is equally good. And it's got a line-in jack, by the way, so you can connect your smartphone for audiobooks or podcasts, because the speaker in it is really great, surprisingly good. You can read all about it at ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. Relatively inexpensive, too. And you can order it not only online at ccradio.com, but if you can't go online, you can order it by phone. 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. Sure, you can get it overnight from Amazon or Bi-Mart or something like that, but if you want the real deal experience, go to ccradio.com. See some great products, get some great information, and look at the CC Radio EP Pro. And if you want to remember what customer service was really like back in the day, call them. 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. So it's the CCEP Pro. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
I'm asking you, boom, 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 boom.
Please be my girlfriend. I've been waiting for a long, long time. For that moment I could call you mine. A little girl, say yes.
I tell you,
yes, yes.
Why don't you be my
girlfriend? Please give my heart one little chance. And we can build a sweet romance. I really love you so.
I'll be faithful and true. Please let me prove it to you. I love you, Maggie.
And I feel this way until eternity. Please be my girlfriend. I want to be your lover, lover boy. Baby doll, please fill my heart with joy. Please say yes.
I tell you,
yes, yes.
Why don't you be my
faithful and true. Please let me prove it to you. I love you madly, and I feel this way until eternity. Please be my girlfriend. I want to be your lover, lover boy.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Of course, those are the Cadillacs, 1957. I'm Josie, my girlfriend. That's two words, girl and friend, in case you're looking for it in the collection. And it was Rita in Harwood Heights who had said, are you going to play more Scotty's requests? And Carol, who does the world's best show prep, was kind enough to give me Scotty's request log again. And the first thing I saw on it was my girlfriend. And I said, yeah, you betcha I'll play that. And we'll play a number of others as well, along with your requests as we get to them. All right, so 888-876-5593. 8888. Raleigh, if it's on your mind, it'll be mine, or else I'll threaten you with the tabloids again. All right, so here's this family that finds a million pennies while cleaning out their home. By the way, if you're wondering, 1 million pennies will be about worth about $10,000. And not about, actually, unless you're trying to, you know, price the copper in it, I don't know, but in terms of just cash, it's $10,000. So there it was, a realtor from the Inland Empire, and that's you know, California area, like San Bernardino, Riverside, and all that. In this case, he and his wife discovered in her father's former home in a Los Angeles suburb in the Pico Union neighborhood that there were a million pennies in a crawl space. Now, by the way, this begs the question, how do you know it's a million? And of course, you're probably already ahead of me. They counted. But not only that, why did they do this? Because that's a pretty arduous task, truth be known. Well, this is where optimism comes in. They were figuring there's got to be a worthwhile coin in here somewhere. You know, that one in a million coin. Well, they had a million, figured they had one. Well, apparently these are German immigrants, Fritz and his brother. And they lived in the home for decades. Fritz died. His brother moved away. And then since then, other relatives, sisters, cousins, spouses have been living there. And now they've all been cleaning out the historic home with plans to renovate it for the next generations. They're not trying to sell it. They just figure, well, we got to get it up to snuff, shove more relatives in it. Sure, why not? And so, you know, filled to the brim, by the way, you know, the pennies is just the start of this story. I mean, yeah, talk about hoarders. These people kept everything. And over several years, the living descendants of this family have been cleaning it out little by little, getting it ready to renovate. And then all of a sudden, they get to the point where they find, all right, a million pennies. Now you're saying, how do you just find that? Well, they were cleaning out the basement and the crawl space was tight, requiring members of the family to get on their knees to reach the deepest corners. And yeah, nice. I admire that kind of cleaning. They were just trying to do a thorough job. And then it was down the rabbit hole. They stumbled on some loose pennies. Well, that happens. You know, the paper rolls had disintegrated from years of basement dwelling. And the loose pennies, well, they find crates of pennies. Then they find boxes of pennies. Then they find dozens of bank bags filled with pennies. And from banks, of course, that don't exist anymore. You know that's coming. All right. So they were pretty excited, although it did dawn on them that they had hundreds of thousands of pennies. And each bag, by the way, weighed several pounds, and they had to pull it from the crawl space. I mean, this is deluxe crawl space, to say the least. It's a lot of crawl space. And then they had to bring it into the light of day for the first time in years. And so they randomly selected three bags. Because, you know, what if it isn't all pennies? Well, it is, by the way. But what they were looking for is, are all the pennies copper, you know, not zinc, which the United States switched to in the 80s. And of course, there were no zinc pennies. These were all old copper pennies. And they actually didn't count one by one initially. They did the scientific thing, some rough mathematics. They weighed bags of pennies, determined how much each bag held, then stopped once they felt comfortable with an estimate of a million. But then, it's what do you do with a million pennies? You know, you're not going to take it all to the machine that's in the grocery store. You'll be there for the next 20 years. Yeah, one of them actually said that. We got to take it to Coinstar. No. Firstly, that's 8%. And there was no way they could actually get that many pennies to the grocery store. And so they called banks, and banks all refused them, saying things like, we don't have that kind of room in our vault. Don't bring them here. So they were hoping that local banks in San Bernardino, you know, there in the Inland Empire, would take it. But first they needed to get all the pennies out of the basement, and bag by bag, they lugged them out of the basement, up the stairs, into the trucks, hours and hours and hours. And two trucks, by the way, loaded the pennies onto the axles of the truck's beds, watched as thousands of pounds of copper pennies, in fact, pretty much killed the suspensions. They drove sinking trucks in the slow lane to Ontario, where they tried to figure out what to do next. The local bank was no more interested than Wells Fargo. Not a bit. And so what's next? Well, I'll tell you coming up on WGN Radio.
There's satellite communications, long-distance internet relations. The world's a little faster every day. I know it's all well and good, and I don't embrace it like I should, but I wouldn't want to go backwards even if I could. But I still like bologna on white bread now and then, and the sound of a whippoorwill the grass between my toes, and that sunset sinking low, and a good woman's love to hold me close. I like my 50-inch HD plasma. Feels like they just reach out and grab you. 500 channels at my command. I finally gave in and got a cell phone that I hardly ever seen to turn on.
WGN Radio, I'm Riley James. That's Alan Jackson for Stacy. Yes, 4 minutes and 30 seconds of Alan, and we won't play it all. It actually came out in 2008 on the Good Time album, and critics were not very kind, but for whatever reason, Arista decided, we'll release it as a single anyway in 2009. And people love it or they hate it, and that's usually the reaction. It debuted at number 56 on the charts, which wasn't that great, but the problem is it peaked at number 32. And that was the first time that Alan Jackson had missed the top 20 in like about a decade. So not necessarily a hit, but there you are. That's Alan Jackson for we'll get back to Scotty's request, I promise. All right. But now let's get back to our brain trust family here. Yeah, the German immigrants, Fritz and his brother. All right. Who were John, of course, the realtor, is the brother who's still alive. Fritz is no longer with us. And so they find a million pennies and do the only reasonable thing after the banks won't take them is they decide, well, they're all copper. We've determined that. They say that you get rich one in a million. So when I first read that part of the story, I thought, oh, dear God, don't tell me they're going to look through every one of them. Well, no, they didn't. All right, that's the only smart thing in this story so far. But they got the pennies, a million of them, back home to Ontario, California, and they were trying to figure out what to do next when no bank would take them. And they already said, you know, you see all these stories. People are finding pennies worth $2 million. Now it only takes one rare coin to change everything, and we could get lucky. Well, calmer heads prevailed in this family, and they decided that after months and months of dealing with the pennies and all they went through, that probably they should stop short of going through each of 1 million pennies. But they wanted a fair value. So what they decided is they'd put them online, not eBay, on OfferUp, as far as that goes. And they were only asking $25,000 because they figured, well, you know, it's more than double the $10,000 value in normal currency. Maybe the copper alone, who knows? But if somebody gets lucky, well, we could do well. They've gotten some piecemeal offers from people interested in a portion. And they're like, no. Smartly, they're saying, no, it's all or nothing. And, one person offered up the copper value, but it was impractical, to say the least, and resource-heavy and all those things. So, and the family is saying the value is in the uniqueness. All right, so my question was, how did 1 million pennies get into this crawl space? Oh, that's the best part, really. So John and Fritz, the German immigrants that we were mentioning, decided that when Fritz in particular, the nation switched to zinc to press pennies in the 80s, copper's going to have some value. And Fritz thought this was a way to amass wealth for the family. And Fritz was a butcher, by the way, who'd worked in Hollywood for years. And he'd go take his paychecks to the bank and ask for them in copper pennies, figuring, well, the value is only going to go up in time. And he was always kind of in mind of how best to protect the family and how best to raise some wealth. And after a while, he had 1 million pennies, and then he died. All right. And the rest of the family didn't know it was there. All right. Now they do, but so far it's not much more than a headache. But, you know, if you want 1 million pennies, there's a family in near San Bernardino, California that would love to help you out. So 888-876-5593, along the same lines. James is in Oregon, and welcome back to WGN Radio, James.
How you doing?
All right, what's happening?
Oh, I just laughing about those pennies. I had an uncle back in my hometown, Steubenville, Ohio, and he worked in the steel mills, but I don't know if he ever had a car or not, but anyways, he always whenever he went bought anything, he'd stop at the bars on the way to work and on the way home. But he never, it was reportedly, he never spent his change.
Right.
And so he'd put them in jars and he'd store them in his basement or his cellar. And then he'd go through them and every once in a while try looking for valuable things. Anyways, when he passed away, his family went to the bank and they didn't know what to do with all these coins. And so the bank man came over and he said, well, I'll pick them up, take them to the bank, cash them in for you. He came over and there were so many coins in there. He had them in jars and in footlockers
and stuff. Right.
They had to send an armored car over to pick it all up.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So I don't know how much it was worth or he had, but that kind of reminded me of that. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is I heard the other day where J.P. Morgan settled with Jeffrey Epstein's victims for like $190 million, and Deutsche Bank settled for like $70-some million, like that.
Huh.
I just wonder if, what's his name, Jamie Dimon?
Yeah.
If I was wondering how secure his job is now with J.P. Morgan.
Well, it's all hard to say because, of course, the reason they paid out the money wasn't because they were complicit, but because of their relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. And, you know, there was obviously that was in litigation for a while. But $290 million. But, yeah, I would think it'd be interesting to see. We'll find out.
Yeah, I just wonder what the what the board might think about spending. I mean, I'm at $190 million out of for J.P. Morgan is probably like pocket change for most people, you know, but for them. So it's probably not a big hit.
And I don't know enough to know what his knowledge, let alone involvement, but knowledge was in this. And I would think that that is probably the real question there. And he's when J.P. Morgan Chase merged with Bank One, that's when he became CEO, as I recall. And so
I didn't know how far back his relationship
was. Yeah, he'd been with Citibank a while and before that, and I think that you know, he was a Harvard Business School graduate, so you know, you can see what that was about. And so he turned down Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Lehman Brothers, and became an assistant at American Express, and that was his first gig. And because his friend had been there, Sandy Wheel, I think, had been there first. And then he took over Commercial Credit, which had been CDC controlled data. And so he was their CFO. He wasn't even 30 years old, I don't think. And then there were a bunch of mergers and acquisitions. And so that's how Citigroup was formed. And so he was at Citigroup till almost the end of the century, I think. And then I think that he became CEO of Bank One, like I say, which at the time was big. And I remember they had offices right there in not I don't think it was their headquarters or anything, but right in Elgin. Because when I was living in Rockford, I remember back before this merger, I remember, oh, my God, I'm going to be late on a Bank One credit card. I drove it to Elgin. But anyway, when J.P. Morgan merged with Bank One, that's how Dimon became president of the combined company. And then, then you know, CEO of Morgan Chase and president. And he also, I don't know if he still is, but he was a board member of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. So, you know, that's big, big time to say the least. So, you know, I remember he was very vocal about Basel III, which I don't blame him or anybody else because, of course, that's 100% what led to the 2008 problem. And so, but I don't know. I don't know, and I'd have to look at that, where the paths with Epstein cross, because, you know, let's face it, you'll see Epstein on the cover of the tabloids, but you won't see Jamie Dimon because, of course, who the hell is that to most people? So,
you know, I just heard a little bit on the news about it, but they said that it was because the way they were loaning him money or he had loans through the money and using that for his stuff, you know, Epstein was, wasn't okay. so much that they were, like you said, complicit with doing it, just that.
Well, here they apparently, were any... I'll look this up, and according to CNBC, you decide what that means. But Jamie Dimon testified last month that he had no involvement with the Jeffrey Epstein account, and he was deposed for those lawsuits, and that you're talking about, and he denied having any contact with Epstein. Now, he obviously says he expresses remorse that the bank was ever involved with Epstein. But then it's going to be up to an individual, not me, because I don't know any of these facts, to determine, is that plausible considering the extent of Jeffrey Epstein's wealth? I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Well, considering how, you know, the reported clients he had too, you know.
Well, yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah.
So he certainly sailed through those depots, but obviously after that the bank thought, yeah, we better settle. So I don't know the logic behind that either. So
no. Well, I just who knows what they would have gotten if it went to trial.
Well, that's right, because when you deal with that, now you're dealing with an emotional situation. No matter how good you are at picking jurors, you got an emotional hot button there that's certainly a gamble at best. So I don't know. All right.
Oh, well.
Well, good deal.
Well,
thanks.
I'm gonna let you go. And
appreciate the call.
Some more.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Yeah. Bye. So, that's interesting. Of course, Epstein and the tabloids. Maybe we'll get to that this week. But that reminded me of something that I think just went right out of my head. I tell you, talk about can't hold a thought hostage. Well, I'll have to try to conjure what that was and maybe play another one of Scotty's requests coming up next on WGN Radio. Oh, well, there you are. And so, I'm just sitting here waiting. I'll get the 30-second warning. Well, I'll get the Chantels is what I'll get.
Gone. Gone.
Raleigh James, those are the Chantels. That's another one of Scotty's requests. Not only that, he thought the Chantels were the best girl group ever, and he wasn't alone. Many people shared that thought. Richie Barrett, of course, put them together, but it was George Goldner who put them on end. Arlene Smith, the lead singer, was also the co-writer of He's Gone, along with George Goldner. How much George wrote, I don't know, but probably more than most label owners. 1957 on end, so rest in peace, Scotty. All right, I know what I was going to tell you. It finally came back to me. The other night we were talking about Dave Ramsey being sued for endorsing a sponsor. And, as I said at the time, I need to know more of that story, but you need to, obviously, if you're a host, you should be very careful what you'll put your name on, to say the least. Well, I know a little more of the story now, certainly not all of it, but our buddy Steve, who listens in New Jersey, sent me a link to Dave Ramsey talking about this actually 2 years before the lawsuit in 2001. And apparently, what not apparently, I heard it. What he was saying on the show from 2001 was that they had a former sponsor who was adept at getting people out of timeshares. And the whole show basically was devoted to how much he hated timeshares, to say the least, and for all the reasons that you probably know or should know. In any event, he said the sponsor had grown so big they were unable to service the accounts. And, you know, and that, of course, led to them letting a lot of people down. Well, that, of course, doesn't answer the whole story. And there's a number of questions that remain. But the interesting part of Dave's explanation was talking more about what the timeshare companies were doing in retaliation. And he was coming up with example after example of how the timeshare companies were trying to put anybody out of business who tried to question these contracts, which many people find to be absolutely egregious. And he mentioned some of the majors and said, you know, they absolutely were after this company. And we know there were issues that way. But as I was reading that, a chill kind of ran down my spine and said, you know, you gotta wonder. Are the timeshare companies behind the lawsuit? And I don't know, but the lawsuit obviously is allegedly on behalf of several listeners who were out several thousands of dollars each for signing up with the company to get them out of their timeshare, and the company didn't do it or anything close to it. And of course, Dave had been endorsing them on his show, just lavishly endorsing them. And so, you know, Dave's explanation is, you know, they were great at the beginning and then they were overwhelmed. Okay, well, you know, again, we could talk about that six ways to Sunday, but it just occurred to me big time. I'll just bet if we scratch the surface that the entities behind it might be the timeshare companies who were taking a lot of grief for it. Well, we'll see. So anyway, wanted to pass that along, and a big thanks to Steve for bringing it up, because, you know, I like certainly to be fair in terms of any assessment I have, which, again, I told you I don't have any firsthand information on this whatsoever. But from what I knew, I think never, ever, ever endorse anything in which you do not fully believe. And also, this is the other part, if things go wrong, you, as far as I'm concerned, you're on the hook for making it right. And that's what apparently didn't happen at all in this story. So I don't know. So 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. There was another story that, man, it really starts to make you wonder about... in the bigger picture about, you know, things that go bump in the night and karma and all that kind of stuff. Because here's a 22-year-old woman who refuses a ride with a drunk coworker because she doesn't want to be in a position of riding with a drunk driver and ostensibly getting injured or worse. Well, it turns out that so she didn't take the ride. The drunk driver gets in his car, and I do not think it was intentional. Nothing in the story tells me it was intentional. He strikes and kills her. He runs her over. And this was near Syracuse, not in some country you can't find on a map. And this young girl was at a bar, 22 years old, a bar with a coworker. And, you know, when they were leaving, she refused to get in the car, say, "You're intoxicated." So she decided she was going to walk home along Route 57 around 11 o'clock at night in Clay, New York. It's a Syracuse suburb. And here is the coworker getting in his car. "No, I'm not drunk." Yeah, that's good news, right? He hits her, and apparently he was a 23-year-old guy. Joshua was his name. And within 2 minutes of running her over, he crashes his car into a sign in front of a Salvation Army thrift store. Yeah. And at that point, that crash causes his car to burst into flames. So he was taken to the hospital in police custody under suspicion of driving intoxicated, but he didn't sustain any injuries, by the way. And Betty wish he did at this point. At that point, the officers who nabbed him had absolutely no idea that he had run somebody over. And maybe we'll tell you more about that story. You can see it for yourself. We've got 2 more hours to talk to you, and I hope you'll join us. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
I've been gone, at home. But other fellas kept on calling while you were gone. So I had the number changed, but I'm not acting strange. Welcome home. Nothing's wrong. So I'm saying
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Judy Clay and William Bell. Private Number. And yeah, that was Booker T. Jones and William Bell wrote that. And of course, Judy Clay got top billing on the 45 on Stax, and that came out in 1968. And that was, I think that was Stephanie's request last night. Yeah, all right. So there you go. Stephanie and Madison want that. So we got Elizabeth in Rock Falls. All right, we're going to find out about Mr. Chubbs. How's Mr. Chubbs doing?
Oh, Raleigh, he's been in trouble.
No, what did he do?
Oh, no. He was so eager to eat the other morning that he jumped up and scraped a big chunk of skin off my leg.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Oh, no. Did this require a doctor's visit?
No, I've had similar wounds in the past, and I had a lot of supplies left over.
Okay.
So I'm a nurse, and I knew what to do, how to handle it, so no, I didn't.
Okay,
I didn't
good,
go.
Good, yeah. So you got the antibiotic cream and the Band-Aid and all those kind
right,
of things.
Right,
oh, man. Man, Mr. Chubbs, how dare you? Oh, man.
And then the day before yesterday, I was eating a nectarine,
yeah.
And I stood up to take the pit or the rest of it out to the kitchen. I dropped it.
Uh-oh.
And he just gulped down that nectarine pit.
Sure.
In one big gulp.
Yeah.
So I looked that up, and it said that there's cyanide in peach and nectarine pit.
Well, there is, but hopefully not enough.
Not enough, no. And then I read to help it come out.
Yeah.
You make a Vaseline sandwich.
Ah! So,
here I am spreading Vaseline on a piece of bread. Made me half sick to do it.
Yeah.
And then I'll put a little apple jelly on top of that and cut it up into cubes. And, oh, he just wolfed it down like it was steak.
Oh, God. God, yeah.
And all of that, it all came out okay.
That's good. Good. Well, you know,
yeah.
he's large enough that you didn't have to worry about him choking on it. He got it down very well.
Oh, very easily.
Yeah, yeah. So we should mention, if anybody's listening, Mr. Chubb is of the canine variety, obviously. And
and he's a variety of a canine.
Well,
too.
That's right. And his prevailing weight, you think right now, would be about what?
Well, he was 59.7 when I got him.
Uh-huh.
And then he got down to 56.3.
Uh-huh.
And he's down to 54.
All right. Well,
he's
see.
Still he's got a long ways to go. But I think he hit a plateau, you know, like you do when
yes,
you're
yes, absolutely. And he's not pleased about it. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I know. I can understand that big time. So if Mr. Chubbs was at his fighting weight, his svelte self, what would he weigh?
He should probably weigh around 40 pounds.
All right, so this is not bad. I thought you were going to tell me 19 or something. All right,
no,
so
no.
We just have another 10, those last stubborn 10 pounds, I tell you. Yeah. All right.
And I have to tell you, the first time I took him to the vet, of course he had to get on the scale.
Yeah.
And she announced 59.7.
Yeah.
And I said to the people that were in the waiting room, I just got him from a shelter.
You're right. I would, too. Exactly. I had nothing to do with this.
I was embarrassed.
So what brands, what breeds do you think Mr. Chubb might comprise?
I think he's part collie.
Okay.
Maybe some shepherd. And the shelter told me part Norwegian Elkhound.
Oh, my God. They can be big.
That's his tail. He has that big plume
tail. Oh, that's
tail.
Wonderful.
But his face is like a collie. So
okay.
I don't know.
Okay. And his hair's long, I take it.
Well, I did have him groomed and trimmed down really short because he was panting so badly,
yeah.
even
yeah.
before it got hot.
Sure.
So he's growing out again. It's about time to go back. But no, he would have long, long hair if I let him.
That's nice. That'll be nice in winter.
Right.
Oh, man.
Well, what I called about was Ishnala. You always say you like to, you want to endorse things that you know about.
Yeah, and I've never been there, but I'll tell you what, those commercials are mouthwatering.
I know, and I've been there. I've been there several times, and it is a beautiful spot.
Oh, man, yeah, they talk about the roasted duck and everything else. Oh, man, it's like, shut up, don't do this while I'm hungry. Yeah.
It's like a magical place. I can't explain it, but you can go sit out on the deck overlooking this beautiful lake. And
yeah, Mirror Lake.
Very pretty place.
And
the bells have changed so much over the years. It used to be a kind of a quiet, happy spot, and now it's so commercialized with huge water park, indoor water park, and lodges, and I don't know what all.
Yeah, but Ishnala is still the same. They got a website, and their pictures look great. But yeah, every time I hear Bob Prosser talk about what he's serving, I'm like, oh, God, stop this, you know, because it all sounds so good.
And he always says, the only thing we overlook is
Mirror Lake. Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, it sounds just great. Yeah, yeah. Want one of those prime ribs is what I want.
I don't know about duck. I've never had duck.
Well, duck can be wonderful, but it's very rich. But the prime rib is usually my food of choice.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Love the skirt around it, especially. Oh, man, yes.
My mouth is watering now.
I know. So, yeah, I had a feeling that place was as good as he makes it sound. Yeah.
It is. It really is. Great. I wouldn't have called you otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
say anything more.
Good for him.
And one thing, you have a title company or a company that protects your title.
Okay.
And when I moved into this house last fall, the county clerk called me and asked me if I wanted title protection. And she sent me a little form.
Uh-huh.
And that's all I had to do.
But right.
Maybe it's harder in some places.
You know, one of the problems with everything being online now is that things can be transferred without your knowing it. And that's truly frightening. So, I don't hear all of the return feed from WGN. So I don't know much about that sponsor. But man, for whatever reason, that Bob Prosser spot, man, that just cuts through every time. I'm like, give me the prime rib now.
Yeah. Take me there.
That's right. Yeah,
well, a hell of a trip.
If it weren't, I don't know, 2,500 miles, I'd go now.
It's only about. Oh, what is it? About 150 from me, maybe?
Yeah. I'm surprised I didn't know about this when I was in Rockford, because that was very drivable then, and I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know about this, but I'll tell you what. I'll make up for lost time eventually. We'll both be well enough to travel, and we'll get there.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Nice to talk to you, Val.
Likewise,
thanks.
And give Mr. Chubbs a big hug for me, even though he obliterated your leg.
He's already asleep in my closet.
Oh, of course he is. That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, good luck and thanks.
His little hideout.
Yeah. Appreciate that. All right.
Okay.
So, yeah. Well, you know, when you're good 11 pounds overweight, you might want to sleep a little more. Of course, I understand. That's hilarious. Yeah, but she did a wonderful thing. She adopted Mr. Chubbs. So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh on WGN Radio.
No.
Friend Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That, of course, is the Staple Sisters. I'll Take You There in 1972 on Stax. And Johnny D, who wanted to hear that, happy to oblige. So, you've heard, and maybe you saw it, I hope so, the special that was on News Nation with the government whistleblower about UFOs. What I loved about it more than anything else was after the fact, you have a few congressmen who are saying, we're going to have hearings. And in a couple of cases, when they were interviewed, they said, well, did you read about it? Because the Washington Post did a big article on it right before the News Nation special aired. And no, I saw it on TV. Like, yes, way to go. In any event, it's really interesting because this guy is so credible. What he doesn't have is firsthand proof. But he was in the military and served on committees and in departments enough that he is absolutely convinced that that the government is well aware of UFO activity and has not been forthright in coming forward with that. So I don't know where the hearings will go, but more and more you're starting to see these articles. And when they start to proliferate like that, the first thing you think is, uh-huh, they're preparing us for something. And so it's going to be very interesting. So, yeah, there's a number of military individuals who are saying, they're among us and they're watching our every move. Yeah, probably since World War II. Yeah, blowing up that pesky bomb is what probably attracted the first attention. And then came Roswell, which no one talked about for years. You know, I used to drive through Roswell all the time, you know, just small town with really not a lot to offer in New Mexico. And then somewhere, I think it was probably the late 70s, maybe the early 80s, they glommed on to the UFO crash that they had in 1948. I'm like, What, 30-something years later you discover this? Yeah, and now they got, like, the museum, and they got, you know, little alien things, and, yeah, it's big business in Roswell. So, 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, we're going to get to Johnny in Austin next. We're going to talk about Neil Sedaka. I love Neil Sedaka. I really do. It's probably my all-time favorite Wimpy White record is Alice in Wonderland. And we were talking about that the other day because Neil recorded all of these in foreign languages, and I know there was a CD out there for a while, and I didn't, after the show, take a look to find out if it's still around or where to get it, but maybe I'll do that, or maybe Johnny's already found out, and then you'll find out, coming up next, right here on WGN Radio. I'm Robert James, and I admit production is more important to me than lyrics or usually even melody. And man, when it all comes together for me, I don't care what it is. I just love it. And that was the case of Alice in Wonderland, Neil Sedaka, RCA, 1963. But if you haven't heard it in Spanish, now it loses a little in the translation because the production isn't quite as good, but...
Llévame junto a tu corazón, Alicia, dame tu amor, mi bien. tu país maravilloso fue Alicia, la mujer que yo soñé. Junto a tu corazón, dame tu amor, dame tu corazón, Alicia, la mujer con quien soñé.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. He trills nicely, doesn't he? Yeah, I'll tell you what. Well, anyway, we were talking about Neil doing foreign language stuff with Johnny last night, and Johnny has called back. I'm thrilled about that. Maybe Gary will as well. We'll have him talk together. And so, Johnny, go and welcome back to WGN Radio. Now, of course,
good evening to you. How are you?
Well, I'm all right. How about yourself?
Good, good. You know, you had mentioned when we talked about Neil Sedaka a couple of nights ago that you said that there was some CD with him and I had bought one of these. It was a four-disc CD on, I can't remember the label. They did some great stuff maybe 5-10 years ago.
Okay.
I can't even remember the name of the label, but it was quality stuff. And Real Gone Music was the name of the label.
Okay.
And they did it on Ricky Nelson. They did it on Elvis. A bunch of, and I got a Neil Sedaka one recently that had some of this stuff on it, but not near what I found on eBay tonight, which is on Bear Records Germany.
Yeah.
And it's a box set of 8 CDs of Neil Sedaka, and oh my God, I'm just looking at it right now, and the description, it doesn't really get into languages and translations, but I imagine this thing's got everything he ever made on it.
Yeah, yeah, it's the complete Neil Sedaka 56 to 66.
Yeah, and this thing was released in 2003. I don't have a clue what this went for price-wise in the stores when it came out, but I'm looking on eBay right now, and the one I'm seeing them over $200.
Yeah. No, they're it's really interesting when you look at that, because there's a lot of stuff you're saying, I've never heard them do this, and that's absolutely true. So it's interesting what is on it, and also what isn't on it, but you've probably got the whole list of what everything is.
Yeah, it's I didn't count how many, but on each CD, from the description here, like, for example, one of the CDs out of 8, the first CD is like 28 tracks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, most of them
26.
Are. Right. Most of them are 28, 26, 27 tracks. Yes. Yes. And I think it's volume 5 that's all in foreign language. Probably volume 6,
there's a lot
too.
Of them. And I did find the one in Hebrew on what I had as well.
Right. Yeah,
but this one called Real Gone Music that I bought, I didn't pay near that much money for it, but it's pretty good too. And speaking of box sets, I was always kind of a fan of Aretha's Columbia stuff, although as we talked about many times, Columbia really didn't know what to do with Aretha Franklin.
Absolutely,
they came a little close a couple of times, but I went ahead it's been within the past year, and I found this Columbia box set of Aretha Franklin. It's called Take a Look, Aretha Franklin, the Complete on Columbia.
Mm.
And it is a box set of, I think it's 13 CDs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, it's at least 12, and I think one's a DVD. And I bought it used. It was in very good shape, but I don't know when they made these kind of box sets, if they just did a limited run on them or what, because they just don't seem to be all over the place.
Most of it was a limited run, and most of the time when the stuff first came out, it was priced no different than any other CD. And then, of course, most of us never knew it was even out. And by the time we
find... I didn't know.
Yeah, I know. And then by the time you find out, it's like, you know, there's seven copies in existence and they won hundreds of dollars.
I wonder... I mean, this Aretha, I've got it in my hand here. This is a nice set of CD. And they're in little, you know, they're not in... plastic jewel boxes, they're in cardboard, which
right.
is fine.
Well,
I don't
care.
That,
absolutely. That's the way the Cameo Parkway stuff was, too, when they put them out. That's fine. I'll tell you, what I find is if there's something I'm jonesing over, man, I just got to have it. I'm patient because invariably you'll see it at some point at a price you're willing to pay. You just have to be very patient.
Well, this Aretha... popped up about a year ago, and I think I paid close to $200
uh-huh.
for it.
Yeah, see, I'm too cheap for that. But yeah.
Well, I should have known. I should know better. But
yeah. No, that's fine.
I mean, I just love that old. I mean, even her old jazzy Columbia stuff is good.
Yeah, not hit. That's for sure. You're 100% right saying they did not know what to do with her at all. And of course, Atlantic just changed her life around, to say the least. But there is some good stuff, not commercial, but good.
Well, you know, as I said, when she was on Columbia, she came. I mean, they let her come a little close with songs like "Won't Be Long" and "Rough mm-hmm. Lover."
Yeah.
Tighten Up Your Tie and that one. And it was funny when Atlantic got a hold of her, boy, Columbia was putting that stuff back out.
Well, of course. Well, that's always the way. Anytime an artist had been on multiple labels, if they hit it big, every one of those labels is going to just mine their archives to put out anything. I used to fight that when I was, you know, promoting Charlie Rich, because he'd have Behind Closed Doors and then Most Beautiful Girl and whatever it was. The deal was RCA, Mercury, you name it. Anybody who could find any Charlie Rich in their vault would put it out. Why not? Well, just like VJ with the Beatles.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know, and why not? You'd be a fool not to.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I didn't even know, for example, until you brought up Neil Sedaka when we talked about this the other night, that he even had a box set.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you talk about box sets, you know, I would think artists like Crystal Gayle would have some great stuff out there. And it's really not much. No. Not, and not that I'm a giant Crystal Gayle fan, but I was just kind of.
Well, it's very often with these labels, it's almost obscurities. You know, like there'll be box sets of the East LA stuff, or you know,
yeah,
I know, I always get them, and when they're out, not later.
That East LA box set is all over the place,
yeah.
And
it's cheap.
I think that's going for about $100.
It is that much.
I think so. Yeah, and there's a lot of them on there, and they appear to be in good condition. Yeah,
no, they are.
I can't remember how many. I think is it 12 CDs?
Yeah, it's about 12. And then there were a bunch of others like Lost Soul oldies and stuff. You know, a lot of the East LA stuff that's probably bootlegged to hell and back, which is fine because they're using the original 45s.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I've got a bunch of those. Yeah, you just have to look, but it is heartbreaking that you'll see something that you really want, and you'll say, "My God, this came out 10 years ago, and it was cheap then. What happened now?" I know. All right,
and I can't. You know, there was a period of time there when I just was not going to record stores at all, and maybe they were there. Of course, they would always have the box sets.
Right.
In a section all by themselves, and here in Austin, there was a big. Music store. I actually went to high school with the guy that owns it, called Waterloo Music.
Uh-huh.
And I used to come to Austin, and every time before I moved here, and I would go there and just look through all the stuff that they had. And honestly, I haven't been in that store in over 20 years.
I'm not surprised. No, I think that's true for all of us, which is why, of course, record stores are just declining completely. Well, Gary has called us back, and I want to conference you two because I know he had some questions. So hang on. And first, of course,
great.
Before we get to that, of course, we can't live without hearing Walter's perspective. So hang on.
Of course not.
That's right. And so right now, it's time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
Yeah. Can you talk?
Can you talk?
Is your old man at home? Can you talk?
Can you talk?
Are you there all alone? Is everything all right? Can we meet again tonight? Call me when he's gone. Can you talk? Is he there by the phone? If you can't, say the number is wrong. Has he gone to sleep?
Can we find a place to leave?
Call me.
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James. Well, that's from East Side Story, Volume 5, Cut 2. It's Ron Holden's version of Can You Talk? Same year, 1973, Vernon Green and the Medallions did it on Dutone, and of course, Ron did it on Now. All right, so we're talking to Johnny Goen, and we're also going to talk here to Gary, who was one of Johnny's listeners. So, Gary, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for hooking me up. Yeah, I have some very vivid memories of listening to Johnny. I lived in Houston from 86 to 90, and when they picked me up at the airport, they were listening to KFMK, and the first you were playing Next Plane to London.
And, yeah, I did play that.
Yeah, I thought, wow, I hadn't heard that song anywhere recently. It's going to be a cool station to hear. So I had a friend who had a lot of knowledge about Houston radio, so he had told me about you, so I was looking forward to hearing you. And then the other day you were mentioning the interview with Percy Sledge, and I remember hearing that live when you did it, and I had some kind of minor sickness, so I was coughing and sneezing and all that during that interview. But I just a couple of vivid memories. Oh, and the Archie Bell and the Drells, or the Archie Bell Tighten Up intro you had. Every time I hear that song, I think of that. That's just a couple.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Did you ever call me on KFMK ever?
No, I never did.
Why not?
Why not? Well, some of those years I didn't have a phone, thanks to my high phone bills, and other years I just didn't.
Well,
it's a pleasure to talk to you. I had some good years at that radio station. It was quite a run, and you say you got there in what year? 80? Did you say 86?
86. And I was there in 90.
Well,
so the one thing I remember about that station, nobody ever left.
Nobody ever left.
Nobody ever left. They had the same jock schedule all the time I lived there, which didn't happen many other places.
It was an interesting thing when I was hired at that radio station, because I'd been in the market for, since 1965. I grew up there, but I was on radio since 1965, and I'd worked for a lot of radio stations.
Hang on a minute. Don't go away, guys, because the news is happening, and I'd rather do this on the air. So stay right where you are, and we'll pick it up right there.
Sure.
Thanks.
Forget and forgive later, baby. Catch you on the rebound. Rebound. You didn't even write me or drop me a postcard. Now you want to come back and make a new start later, baby. Catch you on the rebound. Rebound. Oh, you were the first love that I ever so bad later, baby. Get you on the rebound.
WGN3. I'm Riley James. Wow, well, talk about East LA stuff. Not that Brenton Wood is from East LA, but boy, that stuff was sure popular there. Get you on the rebound, a Huggy Boy favorite, Art LeBeau, too. We're talking about whatever's on your mind, which right now is talking to Johnny Goen and Gary in Austin, who was a listener. So, okay, guys, continue. Carry on.
Well, let me say this, Raleigh. My friend Gary here came up and said, would you please get on a good-sounding phone? He said, your level on Raleigh's show is terrible. And I said, I'm going to go get on a corded phone and get off this stupid handset so maybe you can hear me better now.
Hear you fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I hear you fine. I heard you fine earlier. So, but
okay, well, let me mention this, that I was at KFMK for several years before you got here. I joined that station in September of 1984. And prior to that, I'd been at a lot of other Houston radio stations and done a lot of different formats before you came in. And fortunately for the cab driver, you discovered our radio station, which was great. But
well, my friend
didn't start off
you from KRBE and
yeah.
Oh, you heard
other
yeah,
places.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, this friend of mine from way back did a little history on me and my career, and it's online and it's on the Jimbo, J-I-M-B-O podcast. Episodes 5 and 6.
Okay.
And I tell a lot of interesting stories about the career and where it started and everything. So if you're ever interested in that, there's a lot of talk about Houston radio in there, and he interviews me about a whole lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that you might find kind of interesting on the Jimbo podcast.
I will look for that.
Is this the Jimbo Trashy podcast?
No. This is a guy who used to work in Houston.
Yeah, but I looked it up, and what I'm saying is the first thing that came out was the Jimbo Trashy podcast. I thought that can't be right. So
this is on Buzzsprout.
Okay, so we got to put Jimbo podcast Buzzsprout. All right, or you'll get the Jimbo Trashy podcast, whatever it is.
I've never heard of that.
Well, neither have I, but it's when you search for Jimbo podcast, that's what you get first. Okay, Buzzsprout, now here we go. Yes, if you go to Buzzsprout, the Jimbo podcast. All right, good deal.
And also, on one of the episodes is my friend Walt Babylove, who tells his whole radio story on there, which is very interesting.
Oh, good.
Oh, that'd be cool to hear those. For sure.
Yeah. There's a lot of information there, but the interesting thing about KFMK in Houston, if you did hear me there a lot, I was there, as I said, 2 years, and I was very reluctant to make the move to that station because there was also a radio station in that market called K-Lite, and they were just wall-to-wall music, and that was not the place for a radio personality to be. So when I ended up at KFMK, they were intimidated by K-Lite. So the whole attitude over there was, well, if K-Lite's playing 3 in a row, we're going to play 4 in a row. And I thought,
oh, no.
So I get over there in 84 and stay there for 2 years until I just couldn't take anymore. I mean, I was not doing anything. I was just back announcing records and not having any fun. And finally, the PD and I went to lunch one day, and I said, you know, I got to tell you, honestly, and you guys are great. You've been really nice to me, but I have got to move on. And he said, like, what? And I said, I'm not happy here. And this was over lunch, so lunch was not very much fun.
Right.
And he didn't particularly like what I had to say, and I was at the point where, well, it didn't really matter anymore.
Yeah.
But I wasn't angry. I was just like, I would like to tell you this before I just start sneaking around looking for other work.
Right.
And so, as a surprise to me, the next day when I went in to do my air shift, he and the general manager named Dan Mason greets me in the control room and says, what's the problem? And I said, well, I mean, what? And they said, well, you're apparently not very happy here. And I said, well, to be honest with you, I'm not. And they said, well, what's the problem? I said, I'm not able to do anything.
And they said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to do personality radio like I always did before. And they said, what can we do to make you happy? I mean, we don't want to lose you. And I said, at that point, you know, I wasn't trying to play any games with them. I was just like, this is just the way I feel.
Right.
But the thing that surprised me was that they came in and said, well, we'll let you do whatever you want. What about our music list? And I said, can we just put that aside every day when I come in? And they said, you don't want it? And I said, not really. And they looked at each other and looked at me, and they said, well, tell you what, starting tomorrow, come in and do whatever you want to. It's all yours. But you better be right.
Yes.
And it was one of those things where I just had the vision that I knew what we needed to do. And that's very rare. I mean, I'm not one of these people that feels like I can conquer anything. I can't. But in that particular scenario, it was quite interesting because when they gave me that freedom to do what I wanted to do and get on the phone and talk to listeners and to do all kind of fun stuff, it was just great. And it was shocking because most people would have said, well, if you're not happy here, well, there's the door. We'll see you around.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a great story.
Well, that was what I liked was your interaction, your warmth on the air and toward the listeners.
Well, it didn't start out that way over there, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny, Gary. I met Johnny because of Dan Mason. In fact, we were having lunch in Houston, and he said, I got somebody I want you to meet. You guys are from the same cloth. And that was exactly how that started.
And, Wally, that was in 86, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And, see, that was the time when the state... It took about for that station to really come alive, because it was just kind of laying there. When the morning show went off at 9 or 10 o'clock, it was at 10 o'clock and I came on at 10, they had a very active morning show. It was Lee Jolly and a sidekick newsman, very talented, named Chuck Schrammick. And those guys were doing great, but at 10 o'clock in the morning when they went off, it just shut down.
Yeah.
Everything stopped. And then I came on and played four in a row and sat there and ate lunch or something. You know, it was just boredom. And so when they gave me that leeway to do that, which I wasn't scared at all because I knew what I needed to do. But it was shocking that they did that. I was just blown away because I was
credit.
Ready to go.
Yeah, to their credit, absolutely.
Yeah, Gary, did you have any particular questions about anything that we did over there?
I was just mentioning those memories of hearing you on the air, and I just wanted to put those out there. And there are probably many Houston radio questions I could ask you, but, we don't have the time for that because I...
Don't kid yourself.
No, you can feel free to ask anything you want. Houston radio was kind of a riot. I mean, I can tell you about a lot of stations.
Yeah.
Other than KFMK.
When I was there, it was a 93Q KRBE war, you know, and that was kind of fun to watch with some of the side players, you know, like 106.5 and 96.5 that were trying to fight with them too, and those kind of things you don't see in radio these days.
Well, my
no,
entrance...
but that was before all this deregulation happened.
Oh,
yeah, sure.
No, my entrance
and everybody,
was,
you know, yeah, each station had its own sales department, their own engineering staff, and everything. I mean, everything, and you could just go across the street and work for somebody else if it didn't work out. I mean, now it's a whole new day, and it's
different.
I don't think I'm missing the party.
No, absolutely. As I say, my entree to Houston came courtesy of KLVL, Morales' station, when Woody Sudbrink bought that. And I'll never forget it because his right-hand man was Hal Gore. And Morales said to Hal, I want cash at closing. And so here comes Gore with a cashier's check. And he said, no, I mean cash. And he had to go to the bank and count out $100,000 on Morales' kitchen table. And I thought, oh, this is going to be really good. And and of course, they split it as Woody always did. The AM was, you know, paid religion to pave the way for upgrading that FM, which, like you mentioned, became 93Q much later. Yes, that became KYND first and it did very well, of course. And KYED was a dollar holler. I don't even know what happened to that station. Do you?
Well, let me tell you, this is an interesting story, but you're talking 1970 right now.
Yeah, 69-70, right, when Ray Cassis went, yes, to the Wax
Museum. And here's the deal. I was in Charleston, West Virginia for a year working for WKAZ, the Big 95.
Yeah, great station.
And I came back to Houston in the summer of 1970 and was offered a job at a radio station called KBNO, which was 93.7, which ultimately was K-Lite, and then it became the Arrow and a lot of things. Right. But when I was at KBNO as program director and morning person in 1970, KYED, licensed to Pasadena, was it Ray Cassis? Was that his name?
Yep. Absolutely. And the Wax Museum.
Never met him, but they were a competitor to us. I mean, their signal wasn't all that great, but they were doing oldies, and so were we, along with, well, we played some currents too, but it would have been better to not have them around. They were a bit of an irritant to have to compete with, you know what I'm saying?
Well, and it was funny because, of course, Ray only got to play oldies in the hours when he couldn't sell preachers. And so it was mostly paid religion. But when it wasn't paid religion, it was the Wax Museum.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, oh, man, it'd be great if they were not around. And because KBNO did pretty good at that time. And in 1970, FM in Houston, Texas hadn't really made it yet.
Well, or anywhere, really. 1970, it was the first time that radio stations were number one, according to Hooper, and the only two were both Schulke stations, West Palm Beach and Grand Rapids. And you'd think that Houston would be great for that because of the flat terrain, but you're right. In 1970, no, are you kidding? I mean, it was still KYED, hadn't become KYND yet.
One of the most interesting things that happened, this was kind of like a story like, oh, this was magical. But when I was program director at KBNO, it was 1970-71, around, it was wintertime. Most of the other FM stations were on the Shell building in downtown Houston. We were buried a little bit there on a building called Tenneco, and everything had grown up over us. But the incredible thing is we had an ice storm that winter. And all the stations on the Shell tower were off the air because the antenna froze.
Right.
And we were the only station on the air, for the most part, in Houston for about 3 days.
Oh, man.
You couldn't buy that.
Right. Shell Plaza was like Kirby and Coda and Kind and KLYX and Kilt and KLOL and, of course, later KRLY after KBNO and Kick.
And they were all off the air.
Yeah, it's great.
And we were it. Now,
right.
Now, can you imagine what that felt like for a couple of days?
Well, it's interesting because not probably long after that was when they came up with the concept of Missouri City. Because they were...
Oh, the senior rotel.
Yes, exactly, which of course was ill-fated at first when it fell down in construction. But ultimately, you know, here's One Shell Plaza. After a while, it does get their power back, of course, but it becomes just another building, and it's blocked on a couple sides. And so that's when they thought, well, let's get far enough away from the city so there won't be any structural interference, but near enough to allow a Class C, because as you know, Johnny, Houston is a Class C market where the FM could have 100,000 watts, and so they had chosen without it Missouri City. But there were a lot of spacing problems there.
Oh, you're talking about
Missouri
Senior
Road
in terms of signal?
Yes, yes. There were spacing.
Oh yeah, the multipath issues.
Yeah,
oh yeah.
Right. There were spacing problems, and KLYX I think became KJMQ, MJQ,
And, oh, that magic one. Well, yeah. there was Clicks Radio, which I worked there for about 2 weeks. That's the most miserable job I ever had in my life, playing the Hey Jude by the Holly Ridge Strings and all. It was.
You were in hell. Ugh. Yes, I was hell.
And then, but I went from there to KYOK. But anyway,
which was great. Great.
I was back to my roots. So anyway, but the Houston market was really something. And Gary, you didn't get there until '86, but you remember a lot of the different stations, obviously, that were really big at that time.
Oh, sure. And plus, living in Dallas, a lot of times during the summer, I would hear certain Houston stations like KRBE and KIK and CODA and some of those. And it was always fun to hear those. And then my friend who lived there, he had an encyclopedic knowledge of Houston radio, so he was able to tell me about who and what and where and all that. So,
When KKBQ went from Shell to Senior Road, they changed frequencies. They had to move that from 92.5 to 92.9 for
exactly
those problems. Yeah, and that was a nice station, nice tower. But at the same time, TV20, which was the fate of that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so sorry. Milt Grant had a deal where they'd sign off when the FMs were installed, and that
right.
Yeah, and so. I think to eliminate, 10 stations on one tower, which were actually broadband TV antennas is what they were using for antennas. And they shipped them to Harris and Quincy, and they were installed on the tower section. So they were hoisted into position as one unit, and they were able to pretest them at the factory because they were real concerned about that multipathing.
Gary, were you by any chance aware of that tower collapsing in about 1982?
Oh, man.
Yes, I was.
1,800 foot level. That's they've got the first section up there, and then the final section was being hoisted, and at about the 1,800 foot level, something went terribly wrong. A cable gave way. The antenna broke as it fell. The tower falled apart. It cuts through the guy cables balancing the tower, and it was like an accordion. I'll bet you, and you would know, Johnny, there's probably video of this.
There is video of it, and I know the engineer who was there who was videoing that event. Okay. And it happened to be that I was on the air at KRBE at that time. Now, of course, none of the radio stations were on that tower yet because they were just putting the antenna on it that day. It was a December morning about 10:30 in 1982, I believe. But anyway, from the studios at KRBE that we looked due south, I could see that tower on a clear day. So one morning, about 10:30, I hear all this commotion in the halls, and someone says, "The tower's collapsed." And it was a beautiful, clear, blue sky day. And I went back to the control room and looked out, and the tower was no more.
Oh, man. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are, and we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
My days are getting lonely, my nights are getting so sad. I haven't got a friend anywhere. You know that I feel so bad now. I wanna tell you this.
It's 1963, that was on Backbeat, speaking of Houston, and that, of course, Joe Hinton, you know it ain't right. Don Robey wrote it, as D. Malone. And I've always wondered, and who knows, maybe Johnny Gaughan is going to be able to answer that. And here's the deal. You just heard it. Well, also 1963 on La Louisiane, then the master was sold to ABC Paramount. And you wonder, which one came first? Yeah, since in this case, neither of them claimed to know about the other one. Digress. All right, we are talking with Johnny Gaughan, and it's a pleasure, and he's talking with Gary as well, and right now we're having a tower memories. John came in to say, you know, it isn't that unusual when towers fall. Well, it was unusual when this one did. So we're talking about 10:30 in the morning, 1982, and at that time, Milt Grand Station TV 20 had been on the air for about 30 days. In fact, exactly 30 days, because they were having an anniversary cake delivered, and they were lowering their power to allow for the final installation, and of course, we know what happened, but what's interesting to me there is not only, sadly, did five men lose their lives, but the tower fell across the TV 20 building and killed three cabinets of their transmitter.
I went out there. We had you know what, when I mentioned this on the air after it fell, I said the Channel 20 tower fell, and one of the managers at the station came in and said, "That's not Channel 20's tower. That's our tower."
No, no, you were
because
right.
Because it was I guess it was all paid for by the group of stations that were on there, who were planning to go there. But at any rate, we had an engineer that said, "I've got to go out there. Do you want to go?" Well, I didn't particularly care to see all the gruesome stuff, but I did go. And it was a mangled mess, and I had no idea how big guy wires were.
Oh, I mean, yeah, and heavy. And, man, when they snap, oh, my God. Yes.
Well, it was unbelievable, and I can't remember how long it took them to, well, I guess it had to be investigated and cleaned up and all
that. It was over a year before they put anything else up there.
It finally got back, but it was horrible. But yeah, I think it's on YouTube. It used to be, and there was a guy, an engineer named Andy Hudak, who actually was videoing that day when they were actually putting the top on the antenna on top of the actual structure and at 1,800 feet, and you can see it all happening, and he drops the video camera, because he doesn't know where in the heck it's going to fall.
Right.
And I don't know, it probably says somewhere how many minutes or seconds it took to collapse. I have no clue. But it must have seemed forever.
And it was not it was obviously not a controlled collapse. And like I say, it just fate put it in TV20's building, but it could have been anywhere. But yeah, guy wires, man, when they snap, they can be killers.
Those things were enormous. I had no idea until I just kind of walked around there, and it was. I can't even remember how long it took them to reconstruct it or anything. I don't even remember because KFMK at that point was on some little baby tower north of Houston somewhere with a terrible signal.
Uh huh.
But I, of course, I was at KRBE at that time. But back to Gary and the music that you were talking about. You just played "You Know It Ain't Right" by Joe Hinton, and it's funny, when I heard the intro to that song, I thought it was going to be "Nobody But You" by Dee Clark.
And that's funny because I of course, when I hear it, I always think about "Kidnapper" because it's the same intro as "Kidnapper."
What was the second song you played? Was that "Kidnapper"?
Yeah, that's "Kidnapper," "Jewel in the Rubies."
I have that written down here, but I need to compare those here at home. Because,
do it. Absolutely do it. And then I don't understand why Don Robey didn't, like, kill him, but actually.
So "You Know It Ain't Right" came out first, and then "Kidnapper" came out later?
As far as I know, but we're talking literally, like, months apart, and you might be able to research it and know better. I've never gotten clear copy on what happened first, because Jewel, who has been interviewed several times, he was a teacher at one of the Louisiana colleges. I think LSU, actually. But in any event, he didn't admit to knowing about Joe Hinton. So he was talking about writing it. And here's the Joe Hinton record. Of course, you know, Don Robey's putting his name on it. So I do not know which came first, but they were almost simultaneously. And when you listen to them, the production is even the same. So, well, so that's your assignment.
Yeah, I've never heard them back to back.
Yeah,
before.
Do that. Find out for me what you know. I'm curious.
Well, back to you, Gary. I don't want you to feel left out here, but you were a big KFMK listener at that time. Were you kind of bouncing around the dial all the time when I would be on there middays from 9 to 1? What were you listening to?
Oh, I listen to everybody. I'm an old radio aficionado and all that. So I, you know, they're from 88 to 108 or 540 to 1700 nowadays. I guess I would listen. And I got there right at the end of KYOK, right before they became, I think they became Faith 1590 for a hot minute. But I really wanted to, you know, hear more of them.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny about KYOK. I worked there twice. That was my first job in 1965. And then I returned to KYOK in 1971 through 1974. And they had gone through several sales at that time. I'm trying to think, and Raleigh would know, wasn't it a football player that owned that for a while, or a baseball player or something?
Willie Davis.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
He bought that station in about, what was it, 80 something?
Yeah, he had done so well in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
And so then he was expanding his empire. He bought K-Ace in Los Angeles too. I think wasn't Ed Shane involved with KYOK when you were there?
No, okay. He came to town to take KRBE from automated solid gold rock and roll to live top 40 radio, and I was one of the first live jocks at that time. Yeah, at that particular time when KRBE came on as the super rock in 1974. I actually worked there and at KYOK at the same time for a while.
Oh, that's hot. Yeah, well, of course, you know, in the Paglin Ray days, I mean, those were the heydays. And without a doubt, they were my favorite soul radio chain because, and you knew them, I mean, Mutt and Jeff there, were just so unlikely.
Oh, it was those old days at 613 Preston Avenue at KYOK were just unbelievable. And God, I wish I would have had a camera back in those days.
Yeah,
I didn't think about it. I didn't care about it. But
right, we never think about it. But I think Paglin Ray got it in 1954, and then it became Star Broadcasting, and then Shamrock, and then Willie Davis, his company was All Pro, bought it.
Yeah, I was not working there when Willie Davis took it over. That was long gone.
Yeah, April 1992.
But I did go to the management when this was in 1993, and I went to meet the general manager named Ernie Jackson. They were running Magic 102. They had KYOK, which was simulcast, and I went in there with a demo tape to Ernie Jackson and said, "Would you please consider taking this to a solid gold oldie?" Well, I didn't use the word oldie, but a soul R&B format. And I had the demo at his desk and played it for him, and he loved it. And he said, "I think we can come up with something here where I would program the whole thing." And then it came down to, were they going to do that, or were they going to do talk? And sadly enough, in 1993, the day I met with him was the day that the whole Waco incident happened.
Oh, God.
Because everybody was running to the TV to see what had happened in Waco. But that was the day that I met with Ernie Jackson trying to convince him to go R&B soul oldies on KYOK, which almost happened, but they changed their mind and they went talk instead.
So much for Houston's awesome AM.
Yeah, it was a real shame because I was hoping for the best, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, it's a shame.
But back to you, Gary. Do you remember the days at KFMK when I was fortunate enough to broadcast live from the Goodyear blimp?
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. Yeah. And you can hear the engine of the blimp in the background and all of that. And
we had to buy special headphones for that because they warned me that if you try to use a real microphone, it's going to drown you out. So I went, and the station, KFMK, didn't even want me to do that. I said, hey, I've got an opportunity to do a live show from the Goodyear blimp. And I remember Dan Mason saying, you can't do that. And I'm like, what? You can't do that. And I said,
why?
Why not? And he said, well, that's just dangerous.
Oh,
and I said, you're talking to a guy who doesn't even fly in a damn airplane. And I'm willing to go do this.
Yeah.
And you say, I can't do it? So then I got on the air and I made a big deal out of it. And the listeners were like, yeah, you need to do this. You need to do this. And actually, it was one of my listeners who set the whole thing up. So I got my way.
Oh, that's great. Great.
But it was not through the blessing of the radio station.
Well, I'm sure that Dan was calling his insurance agent.
But at that point, I wouldn't even fly on a commercial airplane, and there I'm willing to go on the Goodyear blimp. Now, I tell you what I wouldn't do would have been doing it from a hot air balloon. Those things scare me to death.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
But at the Goodyear blimp, that was the most fun radio show I've ever done. And we did it 2 years in a row on a Sunday morning.
That's great.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you, Gary, you might remember
this
too. Skipper Lee, I don't know if you ever heard Skipper Lee on my radio show.
You did hear him on I think the Sunday show, a timer.
Yep,
two.
Yep, absolutely. And most colorful Houston radio person ever, Skipper Lee in his funeral homes.
Well, let me tell you what, when he made it big in Houston, and he had been DJing, but he was also a postal carrier from what he told me, in 1964, he came to KCOH in Houston, which was a daytime-only radio station, and brought his Mountain of Soul with his show intro every day. And they had the Looking Glass Studios right there at the corner of Wichita and Alameda in the heart of Houston. And that station was, now again, they were a little daytimer that competed with KYOK, the big 1590, and KCOH, they had to get the police to direct traffic there because Skipper Lee was such an innovator. He would have go-go girls dancing in the window, and the traffic over there, they had to have a police officer go in there and direct traffic in the afternoon because of all the attention that station was getting.
Oh, yeah, and I think he'd been at KYOK before that, actually, and then KCOH.
He had been.
Yeah, I remember his intro, and you might know it verbatim, but I don't. But it was like, last night as I tried to sleep, I could hear voices, and they kept telling me, Skipper Lee, steal away and carry a mountain of soul to Houston. And it's hilarious.
He gave me a copy of that record.
Oh, geez.
And I have it, and if I would have known we were going to do this show, I would have emailed it to you.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, but it was a whole involved thing, and it was just that with Mountain of Soul was his theme song, obviously.
He used that thing, and not only was he was a disc jockey at KCOH, but he also owned some motels, the Venus Motel on Reed Road.
And the funeral homes.
And later on now, the owner of that radio station was a man named Robert C. Meeker, and he passed away, and when he died, his wife sold KCOH to some of the staff, included Skipper Lee and an operations manager named Travis Gardner, a Houston City councilman, a very prominent black doctor named John Coleman, And then Skipper Lee, I'll never forget, back in the 80s, told me, he said, you want to buy my share of this station? He's talking to me now.
Yeah.
And I said, for how much? And I think he said he wanted $300,000 for his interest. I said, I don't have any money, Skip.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And he said, well, I'm going to sell my interest in this thing. I said, what are you going to do? And he said, I'm going to buy me a funeral home.
He did.
And he had me do the commercials for it.
Oh, that's great.
Eternal Rest Funeral Home. He sure did.
Yeah, that's great. That is wonderful. Oh, man, I've just about ended the show. It's been a delight to talk to you both, and I hope you'll both call me again soon.
Well, Gary, I hope to talk to you more often.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, both of you, continue to call. We'll talk to you soon. All right.
Great. Y'all have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
Everybody have a good night.
You too. Thanks, Gary. So, 888-876-5593. I don't think you'll get in a word edgewise because we've got John in Covington who's been hanging around and Johnny D in Ohio, and that probably will be a wrap for this week, but you'll see coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and we're just about out of time, so I'm going to forego the bumper entirely, as I don't know if John from Covington's still hanging on, but we're about to find out here on WGN Radio. Are you there, John? Yeah, we lost John. Well, who could blame him? We might have lost Johnny D as well. I don't know. I hope I haven't lost you. All right, Johnny D, are you still with us? No, we lost Johnny D as well. Oh, man. Well, heck, I should have kept talking to Johnny going and Gary. But in the meantime, let me tell you, tomorrow night is a replay of Monday Night Trivia. And so, therefore, don't call. I know I say that all the time, and people do anyway. But Monday, we will be back with a full live show since the Stanley Cup playoffs are over and Vegas has won. Full show at 10 o'clock on Monday with live Monday night trivia. And I don't foresee any interruptions Monday through Thursday thereafter, at least not until the summer is over, far as I know. So that's the deal. Now, the other thing I always get calls about it, usually after the fact, but the new moon. Because, of course, this gets into the law of abundance. And if you've listened to Marianne Winkowski, you know about the law of abundance, and you got to write your checks. They're not real checks. We're not asking for money or anything like that. But you got to do this just before the new moon, and the new moon is Central Time, Saturday at, I think, 11:37 p.m. So around 11:30 or so, write your law of abundance check. And if you don't know what that is, well, 888, no, don't do that. Go to MarianneWinkowski.com. That's what you do. Marianne, M-A-R-Y-A-N-N, Winkowski.com, W-I-N-K-O-W-S-K-I.com. And you can just click on the Law of Abundance, and you'll not only find out all about it and what to do, but there's also a new moon table so that you can see for yourself the optimal time. Now, the Law of Abundance supposedly works at any time, but it is heightened in its ability to get you all manner of riches. All manner is the operative word. There may not be money at all. It just might be good things coming your way. But we have reports all the time, people who do these who say, yeah, it really, really worked. I got something. And I know, as I mentioned earlier in the week, some of this stuff works in amazing ways. I had lost a couple things and did my St. Anthony, please come around. Something is lost that cannot be found prayer. And literally within seconds after saying that, I found the first item. And then I keep looking for the second one, can't find it. And John had said, well, the first one works so well. Won't you try it again? And I thought, come on, it's not going to be two in a row. I do it again. And same deal. Right after that, literally within seconds after that, I find exactly what I'm looking for. So you just never know. All right, so if you want the final word, you better be quick at it, 888-876-5593. Otherwise, well, I'll just tell you about the National Enquirer. This week's headline is Epstein's Hollywood Playmates Exposed. So you're looking, who are these people? And on the cover, we've got David Brenner, David Blaine, Woody Allen, Irina Shayk, Tommy Mottola, Dick Cavett. There's other inside. But the interesting part, I saw Danny Masterson convicted of rape. And this is an interesting story from the standpoint of, according to what came out, Scientology was doing its best to cover this up. And the deal is now that he's been convicted. And at first, Scientology said, hey, wait a minute, he's a member of the church, and, you know, we handle this in-house. And ultimately, the court said, yeah, that's nice, he's going to trial. And so he did, and he lost. And right now he's held without bail at a county jail in L.A. And there's a number of people who are saying, well, you know, he has a lot of secrets about Scientology. He may be willing to trade them for maybe better treatment or a lesser sentence. So we'll see what goes on there. That was probably the most interesting thing in all of the tabloids, if you're into that kind of stuff. We have 10 stars who hate Hollywood. I don't know if that's true, but they just live out of town. And, like Nicole Kidman, who lives in Nashville. So what? But Meghan Markle, Bimbogate. Oh, man. The men, the money, the truth. Her secret past finally exposed. Well, I don't know how secret it was, but she certainly tried to reinvent herself since her marriage to Prince Harry. And what that marriage did was give tabloids things to talk about for the next decade. Really, more than anything else that did it. But in beyond that, in this issue, we have pictures of her from her former career as, as whatever. You'll have to look at them yourself and decide. But the royal family is allegedly horrified. So that's in the Globe. All right. So there you have it. Now, I know, blissfully short, which is probably a good thing. So on that note, we'll say that's a wrap, and we'll thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls, but especially those of you who called. I appreciate that more than you know. Tomorrow night, a replay, live Monday night trivia, Monday night at 10 Central, right here on WGN Radio.